Well, next, the state papers. Our reporter Fekra O'Kyona has been trawling through the newly declassified documents. He's here in studio with us now. Good afternoon, Fekra. Well, these papers, they cover everything from the serious to the strange, many topics in them, from panda diplomacy that left Beijing seeing red to that now iconic handshake between Clinton and Adams, and of course to the Northern Bank robbery. So plenty in these papers. But first, for anyone not familiar with the state papers, what exactly are they?
Well, Cian, the state papers, they're previously secret government files, as you said there, and they're released every time, every year around this time of year due to two particular laws. The first law is a 30-year rule for files relating to the Republic of Ireland, and the second law is a 20-year rule relating to files for Northern Ireland. Now, that second law, it came into effect in 2018, mainly so that our Northern peace process files would be released at the same time as Britain's Northern Ireland peace process files as well. And that's important, obviously, for narrative reasons. Now, after January 2nd, the general public can go to the National Archives offices in Dublin to see these files, but we in the media, we get a sneak peek of them beforehand.
Oh, there you go. You probably need it. So that's the nuts and bolts of it. They're the two big years are 1995 for the 30-year rule for files from the Republic, and then up to 2005 for the 20-year rule for the Northern files. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it exactly, Cian. And between this weekend and Tuesday of this week, RTE and other media outlets are giving a snapshot of what we feel are the big ticket stories told in those files. Now, some of those files relate to the peace process, as you said. Some relate to the divorce referendum in 1995, a very divisive referendum. And some, as we'll hear later on, relate to frankly bizarre events from the past. But it's also important to say, Cian, that some stories you'd expect to turn up in those files in those years, they don't always do so. That's because of genuine issues like misfiling of records into different years. And a good example of that this year is the awarding of Ireland's first mobile phone contract to Dennis O'Brien in 1995. Now, that didn't turn up in this year's files, so it may be one to watch for next year.
OK, so we'll have to wait for that. That's all the formal stuff out of the way. We can get into the juicy details now. We're 2 days now into 4 days of coverage, Fekra. So let's start with the Northern Bank robbery. Here's Michael Fisher reporting back in 2004.
The robbery began on Sunday night when masked men called to the home of a bank employee near Lisburn. The man's parents, brother and his girlfriend were held captive, while the man was brought off by gang members to Lochan Island in County Down. More gang members were already there. They had gained entry to a second bank employee's home, posing as policemen. They were to hold captive the wife of this second bank staff member throughout the robbery.
This was a carefully planned operation by professional criminals who obviously had done their homework.
Well, Michael Fisher reporting there in 2004. Fekra, what do we learn about the Northern Bank robbery in the state papers?
Well, of course, it's important to remember that the December 2004 Northern Bank robbery, it involved a £26.5 million sterling bank robbery. I mean, that's a huge amount of money, even for these days. A number of the files that we found, they pointed the finger squarely at the Provisional IRA for that robbery, including one document from the Department of Foreign Affairs' Anglo-Irish Division in early 2004. And this is a big deal in this. It said that Britain's Northern Ireland office, and I'm quoting here, was given to believe that the robbery had been organised by Bobby Storey. Now, for people who don't know the name Bobby Storey, Bobby Storey was a very significant Sinn Féin member and Republican figure, to such an extent that he was named in Stormont in 2005 by Unionist MLAs as the Provisional IRA's head of intelligence, while his coffin was carried by, among others, Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness and Gerry Kelly when he died in 2020. Now, that file described Mr. Storey as a threat to the peace process, and similar Northern Bank robbery links to the Provisional IRA are also identified in other related files. They can include a briefing note for then Taoiseach Bertie Ahern in early 2005, where Bertie Ahern told Sinn Féin during a private meeting he had no reason to doubt the PSNI's belief that the Provisional IRA was involved, and also a separate note as well from then British Prime Minister Tony Blair's Chief of Staff Jonathan Powell, saying saying London was certain of the Provisional IRA's involvement and feared that the DUP would, in Jonathan Powell's words, go on the rampage when they found out who may be responsible. Now, we contacted Sinn Féin about these files and these claims this weekend and they declined to comment.
So you get a picture of the tense times during that stage of the peace process for ICRA, but not the only revelations.
Well, far from the only revelations in terms of Northern Ireland in those files, Cian. A separate file, this time a briefing note from one of Ireland's most senior Gardaí for the Department of Justice in May 1996. It also relates to the Provisional IRA and again it names individuals. The file by Assistant Garda Commissioner Noel Conroy said that at that time, and again I'm quoting on this, the current Provisional IRA strategy continues to be dominated and controlled by the leadership. And Noel Conroy then went on to name six individuals. Among those names was Gerry Kelly, who the file said is emerging as the most dominant figure within this group. Now, Gerry Kelly, of course, is a sitting MLA and he's previously stressed he left the Provisional IRA more than 50 years ago after being convicted in the 1970s for car bombings in London. Now, again, Sinn Féin declined to comment when contacted this weekend by RTE News, while we have made several requests for comment to Mr. Kelly via his solicitor. Other people named in the file include Martin McGuinness and Brian Keenan, both of whom have since died, and three other significant Republican figures who remain alive.
Right, Fikra. There are also Northern files and they show a changing view of the Troubles because of world events.
Exactly, Cian. And one of those files that we are publishing today, it relates to the aftermath of the September 11, 2001 attacks. The reality, perhaps, of romanticised views of the Troubles in the US, that file said, may change significantly because of what happened there. And that is reflected in the state papers. Now, one file from the day after those attacks predicted the US would not make a distinction in the future between different conflicts taking place around the world, saying Republicans now may experience a more hostile and very chilly environment stateside as a result of what had happened. That government file, that Irish government file, also said, in its words, a whiff of cordite and connections to Colombian guerrilla group FARC may impact the Provisional IRA in the future in the US. And the separate file, Cian, also includes a formal letter of condolence from then Taoiseach Bertie Ahern to then US President George W. Bush, where Bertie Ahern described what happened on September 11th as evil.
Okay, and then there was that handshake that the White House didn't want us to see. As we know, Bill Clinton visited Ireland at the end of 1995. Let's hear some of his speech from College Green in Dublin.
All of you know that I have family ties here. My mother was a Cassidy, and how I wish she were alive to be here with me today. She would have loved the small towns, and she would have loved Dublin. Most of all, she would have loved the fact that in Ireland you have nearly 300 racing days a year. She loved the horses. I understand that there are some Cassidys out in the audience today. And if they are, I want to say in my best Arkansas accent, Cade Mille Falcha. Fadasail August Slancha.
Bill Clinton at College Green in Dublin in 1995. Now, you heard the Cassidy family link being mentioned there, Fiacra. It's also mentioned in the papers.
Yes, it is, Cian. And while Bill Clinton might have been practicing his cupola focale for that speech, it wasn't quite as clear-cut in the files. Now, the Clinton visit to Dublin, Belfast and Derry, it was full of positive peace process atmosphere, but there were still some bumps in the road, including those involving Mr. Clinton's claimed Irish roots, as we heard him talking about there. That's because a genealogist who was in touch with the Irish government at that time said those claims were a fantasy, leading to a downscaling of the Irish links during the visit. Other more serious bumps in the road included White House officials, as you said in the lead in there, Cian, saying they were reluctant for Mr. Clinton to shake hands with Gerry Adams at a cross-party event in Queen's University, Belfast. And there was also the downright bizarre bumps in the road as well, Cian. One file showing a White House request to allow Bill and Hillary Clinton some downtime in Dublin by moving a live TV speech into the evening was rejected by Irish officials as it would interfere with the seemingly unmovable Late Late Show time slot. Now, Cian, as anyone who lived in Ireland in the 1990s knows, you might be US president, but no one was bigger than Gable.
I'll tell you, you can chalk that one down. Now, let's get on to the files in the Republic, Fiacra. One that really catches the eye is the 1995 divorce referendum. Here's a reminder of that time.
recounts in the 41 constituencies around the country have just been completed. There's still an overall majority in favour of divorce.
The government strategy, spearheaded by a cabinet subcommittee, was deliberately low-key.
A campaign that appeals to people's sense of tolerance and reason has to be the sort of campaign that one is running if one is looking for a tolerant and reasonable society. You can't campaign in a strident and divisive way for a tolerant proposition.
Former Taoiseach John Bruton ending that report by Mike Mallott there. Féachtra, that referendum was divisive.
Yeah, and listeners may remember just how divisive it was. But just for a reminder for those who don't, there were slogans like Hello Divorce, Goodbye Daddy, and of course Use Your Vote to Help Others Rebuild Their Lives. They dominated the agenda over those months and over really the months before and after that referendum. And that referendum as well to legalise divorce, it ultimately passed by the slimmest of margins, 50.28% to 49.72%. So that was real knife-edge stuff that's not been repeated in subsequent years. The belief it could have gone either way due to influence both near and far, it is reflected in the state papers. One file showing Ireland's then ambassador to the Holy See, Gerard O'Brien, requested a formal briefing on how to respond to Vatican interest in the referendum, even months before the referendum took place or was decided. And another from then Minister of State and Labour TD Mervyn Taylor urging government not to go into hiding by avoiding debates.
Right, Féachtra, there's also a file relating to the cervical cancer scandal many years later.
Yes, Cian, and it really does strike an appropriate sombre tone in terms of that controversy. Listeners will recall the cervical cancer results scandal and the tragic and brave stories of the late Vicky Phelan and others. Much of that controversy had its roots in tests being sent abroad, so away from Ireland. And the state papers confirmed those routes went further back than previously recognised or known. This year's files including a reference to a government decision in 1986 to send the tests abroad instead of examining in Ireland, as it would be cheaper to do so.
Well, Féachtra, let's finish off now with a couple of stories from the files that are a little more unusual. First, NASA.
Yeah, more unusual to put it mildly. And Cian, it doesn't really get much more unusual than a NASA request for an Irish airport to be designated as an emergency landing zone for, of all things, the space shuttle. Now, that's exactly what happened in 1995 when NASA contacted the Irish government and asked, although it was pointed out they weren't really asking under international laws, for the decision to be made. Now, NASA was polite about it, it should be said. They pointed out that it would only be needed, Shannon Airport would only be needed as a last resort, but they did also say the shuttle operators would have less than 20 seconds to decide which country to aim for if something went wrong. And that little word, if, Cian, it caused some scrambling from Irish officials, one of whom asked rather fairly and appropriately what would happen if the shuttle missed the runway. Now, that official, he didn't get a response.
Okay, from space shuttles and NASA, Féachtra, to a diplomatic row over a dead panda. Tell us about this.
Yeah, Cian. Well, I think it's a safe bet that one of the few countries you don't want to annoy at the moment is China. But we certainly didn't win hearts and minds a few decades ago in relation to our neighbours, in our friends in Asia. That's because in June 1986, Beijing loaned Dublin two pandas, Ming Ming and Ping Ping. Now, Ming Ming and Ping Ping, they were treated like near royalty for the 3 months they were here.
I think I can remember a poster of them and seeing them sometime. They were of such interest to me, Ming Ming and Ping Ping.
I think I can remember that poster as well, and maybe the 400,000 people who came to see them in Dublin Zoo might remember them as well. There was even talk of them appearing on the Late Show again with Ireland's biggest star at that time, Gabo. But the problem arose after the pandas returned to China. Now, officials there in China suggested the visit to Dublin could have contributed to Ping Ping's later death years later. Now, in 1998, the Department of Foreign Affairs, and that's a file in the records this year, they said Irish officials and Dublin Zoo, by the way, were distressed by that claim, and they asked for a post-mortem of Ping Ping's death to be provided back to Dublin.
Did Gay Byrne get the interview?
Gay Byrne didn't get the interview. It's one of the few he didn't get.
Féachtra O'Kiona, thank you. Well,